Welcome to Aspire, Arch Street Public Radio, broadcasting interviews from our international Innovate podcast series. Here's your host, Robert Rimm.
According to the United Nations, about 55% of the world's population lives in an urban area, and that figure is set to rise to nearly 70% over the coming decades. Many of these cities struggle with a phenomenon known as the Soho effect. Artists looking for cheap living in studio space create homes that make a neighborhood safer and attractive for more affluent people, creating rising demand, higher prices, and gentrification, displacing those same artists who can no longer afford to live there. Tim Jones is the CEO of Artscape, a nonprofit organization founded to address this challenge, with a mission to build a world that engages art, culture, and creativity as catalysts for community vibrancy, sustainability, prosperity, and inclusiveness. Tim is a city builder, social entrepreneur, and change agent who works at the intersection of arts and culture, urban development, community activism, philanthropy, and public policy. Under his direction since 1998, Artscape has grown from a Toronto-based artist studio provider to a globally recognized leader in creative placemaking. In 2014, Tim was recognized by the Geneva-based Schwab Foundation as the Social Entrepreneur of the Year. Welcome to Innovate Podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
How did you first become interested in the intersection of arts and urban development?
In what seems like a former life now, I kind of grew up in the indie theater world in Toronto. I was working for a gay and lesbian theater company and in the 1980s and early 1990s, and through that found my way into creating a couple of different theater facilities for this company. And let me tell you, it was really kind of a crazy adventure in those days, trying to do something that was advancing human rights with public money, working with city builders and philanthropists and community activists. And I realized that there was really a kind of potent combination, a really interesting opportunities, not just to kind of put on a play or festival that would last for a short duration, but actually have a lasting impact on the social and cultural life of the city.
And tell us about the challenges that you initially faced in doing that.
City building, it can be a messy affair. You've got lots of competing and conflicting interests, especially around where the resources will come to make a project happen. You've got the challenge of rallying the community and other supporters around making something happen. So there's actually some interesting challenges that you face. It's a good kind of management training, really, for all kinds of fields, trying to deliver something on time, on budget, and rallying a bunch of different, sometimes competing forces in a single direction.
And what do artists generally face in developing sustainable careers and successfully commercializing their creative practices in urban spaces?
First of all, artists have been like the canaries in the coal mine of the urban affordability challenge that is happening in many, many urban centers around the world today. And we've been working on this issue for 30 years, and we're finding it's just getting harder and harder for artists to survive in cities. There's the housing issue that is now not only affecting artists and other low-income people, but middle-income people in many urban centers face this challenge. And then there's the increasing precarity of working as in the arts. A lot of the work is contract to contract, despite the fact that the value of everything is more about creative content and less about materials and labor. It's just harder for a whole bunch of reasons for artists to make a living from their practice. So we've been kind of studying these things, trying to unpack them and deliver projects that actually address both the urban affordability challenge as well as providing kind of the resources for artists to actually be able to generate income from their practice.
And do these challenges confront a large part of the world, Tim, or are they in some way specific to particular cities and countries?
We're working with a group called the World Cities Cultural Forum, which is a network of 40 global cities. And that group in 2016 declared that the biggest threat to culture in global cities is the urban affordability crisis. Whether you're in Beijing or San Francisco or London, Paris, many of these cities face the same challenge. And for artists, it's particularly acute, not only because they're low income, but as you say, the Soho effect, the fact that they move into neighborhoods, they bring all kinds of energy and vibrancy, and as a result of some of their interventions, property values go up. Because more often than not, they're renters rather than owners, they end up getting priced out of the neighborhoods that they help to enliven in the first place.
And in considering a city's artist population, tell us what role artists play in urban development itself and how vital they are to a city's healthy development.
Artists, they add so much to the quality of life in cities in so many ways that have an intrinsic kind of value. So, and some of it is kind of intangible. They help us tell our stories. They build social cohesion. They actually create unique character and dimension to both our stories and our lives in cities. But in addition to all of that, they actually also leave a real imprint in terms of the built fabric of the city. They kind of change the look and feel of a place. They change the set of experiences that you have within a neighborhood. They help to build momentum and buzz around certain sort of neighborhoods and urban development generally. For a long time, there was a just conventional wisdom that sort of this Soho effect really placed artists as the haphazard victims of the urban development process. But as we've studied this issue, we've kind of come to realize that actually artists are the people who are generally creating the value. And rather than thinking of them as victims of urban development, there's a way to kind of harness that energy to build projects that serve them, but also align their interests with others to build the city as a whole. So that's the kind of work that we're doing at Artscape in Toronto these days.
And now, a word from Arch Street Press. Better to Speak of It, Fostering Relationships and Results Through Creativity, is a book of core management and personal values written in collaboration with Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director of Carnegie Hall, offering firsthand experiences from Gillinson and the leaders of key nonprofit, corporate, educational, and cultural institutions, including the New York City Department of Education, Museum of Modern Art, New York Public Library, and Juilliard, and major performing artists such as Joyce D. Donato, Anne-Sophie Mutter, Jesse Norman, and Michael Tilson Thomas. The book appeals to readers, including nonprofit directors and managers, corporate executives and employees, arts administration staff and students, and the public interested in the health and well-being of the arts. Exploring the vital benefits of innovation and organizational management, serving others and effective partnerships, access and mentoring, budgeting and well-considered risk, media and effective communications, education, and lifelong learning. And now we return to Tim and Robert.
In your work with city planners and government officials, have you found the need to convince them of the value of Artscape's approach, or do they generally embrace the cultural, social, and economic benefits derived from a robust artist population?
I think that there's been an education process on all sides happening over an extended period of time in Toronto, and so increasingly we're finding that planners and private developers and community activists, they're all coming to us now, but in the early days it wasn't always the case. But even in the most, sometimes the most contentious of development contexts, we often find that, you know, you might have a lot of people working at cross purposes, whether it's the community activist and the private developer and the planner and the city councilor, but actually when you dig deep, you actually find that at some level everybody wants the same thing. They want interesting, healthy, vibrant communities where they can live, where they can raise their kids. And culture is a platform that can help to build that. So there's a lot of shared interest that can be built around culture in almost any urban development.
So there really is common ground, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There's a ton of common ground, and culture can be the catalyst to kind of unlock the potential of a place. You know, we learned this in many ways in a project in Toronto called the Distillery District. It was a 12.5-acre site with 44 Victorian industrial buildings on it. And over almost a decade, there were multiple failed attempts, millions of dollars poured into trying to bring this place back to life as a retail district, as a residential district, and other things. And they all failed, and nobody wanted to finance it. And the retailers all said, call us back in 10 years when it's up and running, and we'll kind of get involved. And so we got involved with the private owner of the site, became one of the anchor tenants of the project. And to make a long story short, what was imagined to be an 8-year development timetable happened at about 15 months. And a few months after we opened our spaces, we had 63 subtenants. We'd been through a renovation, a rezoning, fundraised all the money, and we opened the doors through a party, and 70,000 people showed up. And that's when we really realized the kind of the value that arts can bring in urban development, not only to help people see past the failed attempts and the cynicism associated with that, but really to build momentum that was worth millions and millions of dollars and to create this bandwagon effect that opened up the whole area. And today it's one of the quintessential Toronto cultural tourism destinations. People flock there in droves, and it's something that the city's really proud of. So that was the turning point for us when the penny dropped and we said, actually, we don't need to see ourselves as coming cap in hand to the developers or to the city. We can actually help drive the bus and create value for everybody.
So given that momentum, isn't it apparent when you can point to that for other cities to readily adopt?
It is, but you know, the nature of our work, and we coined the phrase creative placemaking to describe this practice of being intentional about leveraging culture as a catalyst for urban and community development. And while there are lessons that we can take from the distillery and other projects that we've done, it's not the blueprinting model or a cookie cutter where you kind of do the same thing in every place and it's just the same, because you're working with a lot of different contexts, different partners, and in every new project or environment, there are different factors that are at play. And so people don't always believe that it can happen in their place. They think that there are other, but there are some deep lessons around what happens when you cluster creative people together. How do you build shared interest and shared value? How do you make sure that you translate the vision to a lived reality for all of the partners? So there are a lot of lessons that we've learned that we think are easily transported from one project to another, but it's not easy work. There's not a simple manual on how to do this kind of thing, because it's partnership building. It's tough. It's working in a different way than people are used to.
And when you mention partners and partnership building, creative placemaking has led to partnerships with philanthropists, with private developers, community activists, nonprofits, and the public sector, yes?
Yes. It's really about trying to understand what the shared interest is and how you can actually put that together in a context or in a project where everybody kind of wins. We were involved in building a community cultural hub in a neighborhood in Toronto called Regent Park, which is Canada's oldest and largest public housing development. And it's going through a 20-year revitalization from a low-income community of 7,500 people to a mixed-use, mixed-income community of 17,000 people. So it's a massive project, public and private led, that involves temporarily relocating those 7,500 people in phases and then reintegrating them into this new community. You can imagine how complicated and challenging that is, especially when the people who live there are largely newcomers and many don't speak English as the first language. And so our role in that project was to step back and try to figure out with the community what culture meant in that context, and then where are the shared interests between the different people and players, and how can we leverage that into something that works for everybody. And so from the Public Housing Authority, we knew that their top priority was around social inclusion and how do you create a new community out of this that's being dissected and then reintegrated into a kind of a mixed income community. From the developer, they were interested in a lot of the community building dimensions, but they're also trying to unlock a multi-billion dollar market for residential development and a place where people thought you couldn't sell a single condo because of the stigma connected to the neighborhood. For the community activists, they're looking for a seat at the table and a way to actually advance a whole bunch of other interests around creating jobs for people, pathways to education, certainly a platform for culture. And artists similarly are looking for a place to showcase what they do. So through that work and working with the community from the ground up, we were able to build a vision that connected each of those agendas. And that helped us attract $36 million worth of investment to build the hub. And it's now been running for 5 years, won all kinds of awards. And that has actually become an amazing focal point and a beacon for cultural inclusion in our city. So all of these projects start with a few people and no ideas. Sometimes if you build the vision in a really kind of inclusive way, we always believe if you do that well, you'll attract the interest and investment to make really cool things happen.
Yeah, and shared interests are a powerful component in overcoming such challenges, aren't they?
They really are.
And when you talked about creative placemaking, it brings to mind Artscape's Creative Placemaking Lab, which is focused on leveraging art and culture for community development by experimenting with forms of city building that span multiple uses. So what kinds of projects is the lab currently working on?
It's kind of our R&D lab at Artscape, and so it does a lot of work for Artscape itself in terms of pre-project development, vision development, community engagement. Right now, in addition to working with groups like the World Cities Cultural Forum and other people who are trying to emulate our work in different cities across Canada, around the world, we're busy developing new models. The lab recently created a new art and design entrepreneurship hub model that we've just opened, and now we're working on something called Artscape Atelier, which is a new way of engaging artists to weave creativity into the built fabric and the landscape and the animation of large-scale developments. So there are lots of different ways to find the shared interest between the development community, the artistic community, city builders generally, and other people who are supporting that work. And we're always looking for those sweet spots and new ways to make that happen.
And do you generally have support from the political establishment?
We do. We're very social enterprise driven, though. We get about 3% of our operating budget from, in terms of operating grants, and the rest we're either raising or generating ourselves through a variety of different social enterprises. And then on the capital side, we always kind of, when we take on a new project, we always seek to set it up with enough capital, some of it raised, some of it's financed, so that the projects can operate on a cost recovery basis without requiring any ongoing support. So that's kind of the model that we've developed, and it's worked well for us.
And about models, in the fall of 2017, Artscape 5.0 was published. Tell us about its goals.
In that strategic plan, we really stepped back and looked at our evolution from an artist studio provider, an organization that was in service to a single community, to one that's working as an intermediary in many sense between multiple people and interests, and reflected on our past and where we thought we need to go. And really, our biggest challenge right now is managing our growth and figuring out strategically where we want to invest our time. And so given the urban affordability crisis here in the Greater Toronto Area, most of our hands-on, boots-on-the-ground kind of development is all focused in this market, and we're really looking to scale that up, particularly in terms of affordable housing and developing a network of community hubs outside the core in Toronto, where there's not been the same concentration of cultural offerings in the past in our city. But at the same time, we have a larger, more global ambition to mainstream the practice of creative placemaking. There's a growing kind of field of interest and practice in this work globally. We helped lead the early efforts in this area, and we're very keen to continue to build and share knowledge with cities around the world. So this year we'll be traveling to doing a tour of Australia, where there's a lot of interest in that work. We're about to engage in a major project in New York City, taking our work and applying it in that context. And we're just, everywhere we turn, we have new opportunities, but we hope that in 4 years' time that the notion of creative placemaking isn't just seen as a marginal part of the urban development practice, but something that's really become more mainstream and more accepted across the spectrum.
And Artscape's new Thriving Artists Initiative is a cornerstone of your strategic plan. What are its key aspects?
Well, part of what we realized as we've grown and evolved is that recognizing that it is harder and harder for artists to make a living through their work, and also the fact that the creative placemaking work, you know, there's all kinds of trade-offs that are happening between advancing urban development, larger urban development goals, and the support that we get for artists. And we kind of recognized the need to rebalance that equation and make sure that as we get involved in these complicated deals with lots of trade-offs, that we make sure that there's enough benefit flowing back to the artists that allows them to truly thrive. And so we're redoubling our efforts in that area, particularly with our latest project, Artscape Launchpad, which is an art and design entrepreneurship hub that really is focusing on helping artists reframing entrepreneurship for creative people in a way that's more aligned with their values and also kind of gives them access to opportunities and markets that they wouldn't otherwise have had. So that's an important new dimension of this package of services, really, that we're providing to help artists to thrive.
So good to hear. shared interests, social enterprise-driven, creative placemaking. And on these notes, listeners can find out more about Artscape and its crucial work at artscape.ca. Tim, good to have you with us today, and all the best to you and Artscape as you build on your mission.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us today. Our library of interviews and a range of further resources are available at our website, innovatepodcast.org. Innovate is produced in partnership with Ashoka, Innovators for the Public, the Kellogg Fellows Leadership Alliance, the Philadelphia Social Innovations Journal, and by Arch Street Press. For PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, this has been Innovate.